Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome into Tech Talk, your weekly visit to the world of technology from a blindness and partially sighted perspective. I'm your host, Dave Williams. Tech Talk, of course, is a community technology program for blind and partially sighted people and our friends and family from across the UK. And we would love to hear from all of you. Do get in touch if you have any thoughts about technology or your experiences, whether they be accessible or inaccessible. We want to know about it. So why not email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Messages and voice notes, all very, very welcome. This week, we'll be looking back at the Consumer Electronics Show, hearing all the highlights from Steve Tyler at Leonard Cheshire, and we'll be spending some quality time with Android. And Robin Spinks, RNIB's lead of inclusive design, will be back on the program to answer one of your listener questions. So stay tuned. It's another Tech Talk. Welcome in to our co-hosts, Tasdy Marshad and Callum Stoneman. Good to have you back. How are you both?
Good, thank you. Wonderful to be back as always.
Yeah, pretty good, thanks. I've discovered an app. I don't think it's new, but I've recently discovered an app called Hugo, which is like a bit like a smart meter type app to help you manage your energy cost and, you know, view your energy spend on iOS or Android. And apparently it gives you some tips to kind of save energy based on your spend and based on your data. So I'm kind of investigating that, see if it's accessible, see if it's any good, see if it can save me a few pounds.
Don't you go, I'll go.
Hey.
Tasdy Marshad, what's grabbing your attention in technology this week?
Well, I'm kind of exploring the Pearl camera at the moment at work. Very portable piece of kit, very interesting. So yeah, I will update you once I've had a bit more of an explore. But yeah, I really like the fact that it can just automatically take pictures of, you know, textbooks and things like that. So yeah, finding it very interesting.
Well, I've been playing my piano and I found an app called Perfect Tempo, which will take any song on Apple Music and you can slow it down to half speed if you're trying to learn to play it. So a couple of suggestions there. So let us know what's on your radar. We always love to hear about that, your tips and tricks and hints and all of that. Or if you've got any frustrations, what's broken, what's not working, and we'll see if we can help out. TechTalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum Stoneman, Tasdy Marshad, welcome in. It's another Tech Talk. The year starts in the world of technology at the Consumer Electronics Show, which takes place each January in Las Vegas. Well, of course, the show is over now, and we've had a little bit of time for the dust to settle and to reflect. And somebody who has been casting his blind eye over the announcements from this year's Consumer Electronics Show is Steve Tyler, Director of Technology for Leonard Cheshire. And Steve joins us now. Hello, Steve. Welcome back to Tech Talk. Good to have your company.
Hi. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah. Was it a good show this year, do you think?
For those that don't know, CES is a kind of, it's a way of getting lots of ideas on the table. Some of them will never fly. Some of them are completely wacky and almost they're seeing whether or not people will buy it. Some of them are precursors of definite things to come, whether they use it as a way of announcing whether or not they're going to be launching. In some cases, 2 or 3 years' time. In some cases, 6 months' time. So it really is a bit of a free-for-all. It is a tech lover's paradise where you can immerse yourself entirely in the art of the possible and the art of things that will never happen.
Right, and lots of the big names, of course, go, but famously some don't.
It's changed over the years. It really was kind of TV, you know, the big names like Sony and Samsung and so on are still there. And it was a way of showcasing their latest and greatest. Gradually, it's become much bigger in terms of reach and scale. I mean, if I tell you now that, I mean, firstly, there is a very live accessibility focus, which we'll get onto in a second. But, you know, there are lots of consumer goods and white goods there, which, relatively speaking, is new. Still laptops, still big TVs and screens and sound systems and all the rest of it. But yes, a number of people don't bother attending, keep themselves to themselves and watch, I suspect.
So excitingly for us, you alluded to it there, this is a mainstream show, but increasingly accessibility is starting to play a part.
Yeah, I think companies that go there have really bought the idea that actually accessibility, well-designed products, as a rule, mean well-designed for everybody. And also what we're seeing more than ever this year, I would say, is a bleed over from mainstream developments finding their way into specialist products. So the obvious ones are maybe glasses and smart glasses, which are mainstream, but with enhancements, very, very good for VI people. Or headphone manufacturers. Know a thing or two about headphones and sound delivery, but actually not a massive step change to blend into the hearing aid community, and vice versa, hearing aid community moving into the headset community.
Right, so a lot more overlap now between those specialist assistive technology devices and mainstream technology, because of course in the past we know that there have been many examples of where specialist tech has influenced mainstream tech.
Yeah, and as we know, you know, blind people have had an impact on that whole development or the needs of blind people. So, you know, today's scanner at 50 quid on a desktop started off life, developed by Ray Kurzweil in the 1970s for £45,000 and the size of a fridge. You know, the gramophone, the second or third item on the patent, I think it was all about serving people in delivering talking books. So we've got a very, very live and active agenda here, and have influenced a lot of the technologies. I'll give you an idea of some of the stuff that struck me, that where some of these crossovers are definitely happening. And the first one I'd pick is a thing called eSight Go. So these are, again, regular smart glasses on one level, but instead of being regular optometric glasses, actually they're two screens. And you can optimize footage in real time. Lots of adjustments you can make. They've got camera technology, so you can crisp up the imagery in whatever way you want. You can change the color contrast. You can change the zoom and coloration and a whole host of items.
Is that a bit like Oxite, Steve? So, you know, we had that product a couple of years ago that would be useful for specific eye conditions. And was that doing something similar?
Yeah. Very similar. And I think there are so many experimental things in this area. And so far, I don't know, they've all been a bit, oh, they're certainly expensive. They've been a bit clunky. But now, you know, we're getting camera technology that's becoming more and more miniature. We've got lightweight materials. People are a bit more aware of the kind of what's really important to people. How do you maximize the benefit of it? You never quite can tell which one is gonna win out, but yes, there are lots of experimental things going on, and this is one of them that I think certainly has a chance.
A lot of us, of course, want a wearable camera to use with services like Be My Eyes and Aira, and maybe even the Seeing AI app. You know, something that is there anything like that on the horizon?
There appears really this year to have been more of a focus on how you enhance vision, rather than your genuine, or what you and I might think of as smart glasses, where they're taking in information and then sort of doing interpretation and so on. There is some interpretation by these, but, you know, not the kind where you might have navigation support, for example, or similar. But, you know, the thing is, the platform is there. You know, the glasses are there. They are. So, given the right nudges, they'll certainly move in that direction, I'm sure. Another mainstream development which will please the gamers amongst us, certainly, Sony. So they've developed, through a project called Leonardo, a new game controller for PlayStation 5 and onwards. And this kit contains a whole host of options, buttons, switches, pressure points on the gamepad. And it's ultimately configurable. So visual impairment, disability of all kinds, you can configure this thing to your heart's content and optimize your game playing experience.
Is this similar to the idea that Microsoft came along with a few years ago to provide different types of Xbox controller and different interfaces?
Absolutely that, Dave, yeah. And Microsoft, of course, went for some software changes as well to support that. Not sure what Sony have done. They have improved things in PlayStation, but possibly not quite to the level that Microsoft have done. But nonetheless, you know, the physical accessibility stuff is well on the way, and it will be interesting to see what people make of it, really. On a very different vein, but, you know, something very live at the moment, my own voice. This is an a cappella initiated thing. You know, not that long ago, maybe 5-6 years ago, you know, if you want to synthesize your voice, you know, there'd be a pretty major piece of work to do. There'd be studio recordings and all sorts of things that you'd have to do to make it happen, record the sentence. Anyway, now, 50 sentences later, and a bunch of neural network-based AI behind the scenes, a cappella claims it can deliver your voice, or indeed any other voice. So now you can begin to create family voices, you can create your own voice. If, for example, you're going to have trouble in later life speaking regularly, a lot of people are using some of these systems to sort of capture the voice of family and so on. Readers to read things to you in the voice of, you name it.
We've heard a bit about AI narrated audiobooks recently, Steve. I guess you're following that as well. And this would seem to be a kind of a related thing, do you think?
Yeah, you know, people are experimenting. I mean, it's kind of interesting. I've always thought this area is amazing on the one level. You know, synthetic speech and the development of synthetic speech is what it is. And it's getting better all the time. You can still tell it's synthetic normally, but, you know, it's not half bad compared to, you know, 20 years ago, for example. On the other hand, I'm a bit amazed at how slow it's been. You know, when you compare it to the effort that's put into visuals, to 4K TV, to, you know, enhanced imagery, to video editing, you know, enormous amounts of money and effort being put into that. Whereas the area of life that we all take for granted, not, you know, I think blind people take it less for granted than sighted people perhaps, but our voice and ability to express ourselves, I'm always slightly amazed at how little research is going into that. But anyway, this is a step change, and it's yet another one. There are lots of them on the market, but a cappella, well-known outfit to some of us, and they've certainly stepped up their game.
We've heard a bit about AI being used to write copy, and even I think there was a comic book recently involved in an intellectual property debate. Was it you that was telling me about a book synopsis where an AI had written the synopsis for a novel and it had boosted sales dramatically because the AI knew exactly what keywords and phrases would press the buttons of people browsing?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so we're getting to a point where the AI can write the book, read the book, and even do the synopsis.
Yeah. You can just dispense with the human. I mean, forget it. We don't need to bother.
Yeah. Get an AI to read it as well.
And listen to it itself and then kind of comment on it, and that'll be that. I mean, kind of nearly ludicrous. And of course, these things are still making glaring and horrific mistakes too. So brilliant. You know, lots of potential around this technology, lots of scary possibilities too, but not as robust as some of the marketeers would have you believe. Relumino, I wanted to mention this to you. Relumino mode. This is a yet again another image sharpening mechanism. So it's developed by Samsung. It sharpens images, outlines, can change color saturation, color background, and you name it. Is available on some Galaxy phones. That's where it started off life, but is just about to be launched later this year on its latest QLED range of TVs. This is all about enhancing picture quality for specific use cases, and you can adjust to your heart's content. L'Oreal So here's the thing. Who knew that what you needed was a computerized lipstick application tool? Now, on the one level, I get it. Slightly frightening. Targets people particularly with physical challenges, but has a range of accessibility functions built in, and they are working on functions to support visually impaired people too. Now, as if that wasn't enough, Laurie, I've been at work, you know, they've created a thing called Brow Magic. So this is an electronic eyebrow printer, which enables you to print your eyebrows using e-ink, and then you can sort of paint them on, and it gives you lots of advice based on your facial contours and all the rest of it, and the kind of dramatic or otherwise effect you want to portray.
Goodness. I'm not even sure what to ask you about that.
No, let's swiftly move on, I think, really. I'm there. I'm going to be doing my eyebrows for sure. Ashy Rays. This is an in-shoe vibration-based app linked to a motion detecting system. It's an app that runs on your phone. It's going to give you navigation support using obstacle detectors and linked to sat-nav. But one of the ways they're trying to get around information overload, I suppose, is build in-shoe vibration systems. So you put this thing in your shoe, and through a variety of different styles of vibration, it's nudging you in the right direction and giving you guidance around, you know, straight ahead or turn left, without adding even more to the audio that you're getting, and so on.
Now, do you need their shoe, or can you put this in any shoe?
No, you can put it in any shoe. It's an underlay. You put it in the shoe under the insole.
I'd be up for that, you know, because I'm really interested in this whole thing of, you know, using haptics and tactile for navigation, because clearly when you've got a voice chuntering in your ears, even if it's on a, you know, bone conduction, you know, headphone or whatever, you know, if you're out and about and there's a lot of background noise and you need to pay attention to your environment, actually delivering directions and that sort of stuff, using haptics or some tactile means would seem to be something worth exploring.
Definitely with you. I mean, systems sort of leave me slightly cold. So the in-shoe vibration thing is closer to the mark, it seems to me. I want to mention DotPad. Some of us know Dot, the Dot Incorporated. So they showcase their thing called DotPad. So these guys started off with the Dot Braille Watch. Says little, is it 4-cell? I think it was Braille Watch. They've expanded their horizons now. So they've moved into 300 cells of more miniature dots that are designed to display tactile information. I'll come back to that in a minute. And then 20 more regular Braille cells, which display regular Braille.
Because just to clear that up, is that spacing is different for Braille than for a uniform, you know, image, if you want to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The idea is that you can show maps, diagrams, charts, lots of visuals. And they've also got a showcase of, you know, linking up to your smartphone camera, for example, which can on the fly deliver whatever is being seen by your camera in a way that is most useful for being interpreted by visually impaired people. Now, that's the test, of course. How easy and can they make it for people to understand? How cumbersome or otherwise is the device? But anyway, they've promised they would deliver this. I think it's fascinating that they've managed to do it. It'll be more than interesting to see how they fare over the coming few months, especially when it hits some of the more major specialist exhibitions. I think this kind of stuff is very good at CES, in that you can get a lot of show time, you know, lots of TV coverage and all the rest of it. But when you go to the more specialised conferences like CSUN, California State University of Northridge, coming up in March, where people are really going to put it through its paces and that know a thing or two about what they expect, that's when you begin to find out whether it's going to work.
Loads to go at. And as we said at the top, you know, this is it's a big old show. There's lots going on. And I'm sure we've hardly scratched the surface, but certainly lots of interesting stuff to look out for in the coming months and years ahead. Thank you so much for taking the time to sort of have a look at this for us and give us your summary of CES.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
That's all right. Steve Tyler, Director of Technology from Leonard Cheshire. Thank you very much.
It's no secret that the three of us on the Tech Talk team are Apple users, but it's worth remembering that Android is perfectly accessible, even more accessible in some places, and someone who knows all about Android is Fiona Dunn.
Mobile devices, of course, dominate all our lives, and somebody who I think is probably slightly more enthusiastic than most is Fiona Dunn. Fiona is the co-host of a podcast all about all things Android. We'll be learning more about that. And also Fiona, from memory, is a musician and also has been a fan of mobile devices for a very long time. Fiona, I always used to remember you having a new phone every time I spoke to you. Where did that come from?
Oh, well, yeah, that's not such a thing now because, well, partly the phones are a lot more expensive than they used to be. But also the Nokia phones, you see, that's where I started. And they used to have different types coming out, didn't they? They used to have, you know, some would have QWERTY keyboards, some would have number pads, some would have touch screens. They kept changing. They all look the same now, don't they? They're all slabs.
They're all slabs with a touch screen. And like you, I used to love those different form factors, different shapes, different interfaces. So interesting. And yeah, as you say, they've all sort of gone a little bit bland. Now, of course, iOS and Android are the two operating systems that dominate modern smartphones. And you have made no secret of the fact. In fact, you have a podcast all about Android.
Well, I fell into that. There's a section on the podcast called My Android Journey where listeners can come on and be part of it and talk about their Android journey. Does what it says on the tin, really. And I did that and I sort of then fell into becoming a co-host by accident. I'm still not quite sure, how that happened. My role seems to be asking questions, lots and lots of questions. And anyone who knows me won't be surprised by that at all. And there's all this misconception in a lot of the blindness world that Android is awful and that it's not good for blind people. And really, they should all get iPhones.
Right, so let's just stop you there one second, Fiona. I just want to kind of back things up a little bit. We will talk more about the podcast later and, of course, tell everyone where they can hear it. But let's just sort of start, given that point that we made right at the top about how, you know, mobile devices now, they're all feel quite similar. You know, they've got this just a big touch screen and, you know, many of the kind of design cues. You know, I mean, I can't help feeling like we have lost something. It's a little bit dull now, you know, and yeah, there's new phones all the time, but really often it's just, you know, a slightly faster processor or a slightly better camera, which you may or may not want to, you know, shell out a load of money for. And you're absolutely right about the cost comparatively. But why for you is Android your first choice? Why did you decide to go down the Android route rather than the iPhone route? Because like you say, many, many people in the blind community are using iPhones, and that's absolutely fine. We're not here to set up a kind of an adversarial thing. But what attracted you? What was appealing about Android from your perspective?
Okay, this is confession time now. I actually have an iPhone as well. I'm still Fiona the Phonorack. I like to play with lots of toys, but I am coming down a lot more on the side of Android lately. I'll be honest and say a few years ago, Android, if you were blind, Android was awful a few years ago. Absolutely dreadful. TalkBack didn't used to have enough memory to really run very well. And okay, maybe it did on the more expensive phones, but there were lots of really difficult commands to do with TalkBack. Funny angles that you had to draw and things, and a lot of people, including me, just went, this is annoying. I don't think they supported Braille either, and Braille is very important to me. So for a long time, I just used iPhones. And then a few years ago, I'm trying to remember what it was that really made me. Maybe I just got curious again, because I've always loved phones, gadgets, toys to play with. And also, I was sick of the fact that iPhones never let you put in a memory card. And if you want to have an iPhone with a decent amount of space, and I've always got loads of Audible books, music, all sorts of stuff, and I want to be using up my battery by streaming all the time. And also, I live in London, so if you go on the underground and you're listening to a story, as soon as you go in a tunnel, that's gone, you know, or your music, if you don't have enough memory on board the device. And a lot of Android phones allow you to put in a memory card. So I bought a Nokia phone. It was a cheaper one. It was called a Nokia 5. This is a few years ago now, about 2018, maybe, sometime around then. And I knew it would be a bit sluggish and slow, but I just wanted to see, do I like Android before I spend a lot of money on a really good Android phone? And it turned out that I did. For a long time, even with Android phones, I've kept hold of the iPhone because Android Braille was awful. They are improving it now. You don't have to install Braille back anymore. Braille is part of TalkBack, which, in my opinion, it always should have been. Another thing about using Braille on Android is that when you used it, there used to be this chime that came on whenever your Braille display was connected. Da-da-ding! And it was really loud. And it'd go da-da-ding! When you turned it off again, probably different notes. But, you know, it was an ascending chime when it connected and a descending chime when it disconnected. Now, I'm a Christian. I'm now a trainee preacher. Right in the middle of church or in the middle of a meeting, that's not okay. You don't want to be the person making weird noises. And people would say, well, put your phone on silent. It even did it when you put your phone on silent. So that was bad. I've been using Braille a lot with my Samsung phones recently. And it's quite lovely now, actually. Although some people will complain because it's UEB grade 2 at the moment, if you want grade 2. I actually don't mind using UEB is Unified English Braille, for anyone who's not sure. And I actually don't mind that. I don't think that much has changed. I actually like the fact that letters are capitalised because it means I know more what's going on. And I've got something closer to the print experience in that way. But I know not everybody agrees, not everybody likes it.
Okay, so the main motivation for you switching was about having that flexibility to expand the storage and also just your curiosity. And what was that experience like, learning TalkBack? You mentioned there that they used to have some quite complicated gestures in TalkBack, and I think a lot of people struggled with those angular gestures where you would move your finger in one direction and then you'd have to kind of draw almost like a corner shape to perform a particular command. And I think some of those commands are still there.
Yeah, you can still use them if you are a fan and you like them. They're still there. Android used to only let you do taps with one finger, really. Now there are a lot more gestures with up to four fingers, actually. And some of them you can assign yourself. And they've even got the, you know, double tap to play and pause like they've got on the iPhone now.
The magic tap. That was a biggie for me. The two-finger double tap, because I've got, you know, so much muscle memory with that.
Yeah.
You know, 10 years plus of two-finger double tap to answer and end a call. You know, that's very hard to shake off. So
I'm
delighted that has been included. And do you find the TalkBack experience comparable to VoiceOver on iPhone? Are there strengths, weaknesses?
My experience of web browsing in some ways is actually better on Android, because if I'm going through a page heading by heading, which I often do, I find that it's quite annoying on my iPhone because it will keep forgetting that I'm going down heading by heading and talk about exploring an image or say delete or something.
I've seen this reported, the rotor persistence. The rotor doesn't always remember its position. So the rotor on iPhone is where you take two fingers and twist, almost like you're turning a dial to change the behavior of the vertical flick, which then obviously changes which element you can navigate by. So my understanding is on Android, you perform a three-finger horizontal swipe, and then that changes the vertical flick. Is that correct?
Yeah, although actually it seems to work when I do it vertically as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Annoyingly, the Braille doesn't tell me what I've changed. The speech
right.
does, but the Braille doesn't. So if someone's deafblind, I definitely wouldn't recommend Android Braille yet. I'd say keep an eye on what's going on. But at the moment, it's not quite there if you just have to rely on Braille.
I feel like we could have a whole conversation about Braille, which might be another episode, because there's a lot of detail to unpack there. Just talk about specialist apps, if you would, Fiona. So some blind and partially sighted people use apps like Seeing AI from Microsoft. I'm thinking about some of the navigation specialist apps like Blind Square or Good Maps. Some of those you won't find on Android. Are there good alternatives?
Yes, there are. So there's, I think Good Maps is one that's on Android. I haven't actually tried it yet. I use Lazarillo. That's a very good one if you want a sort of blind square type thing. And Envision AI is now available on Android and iPhone, and it's now free. And I honestly find, I do use Seeing AI as well, because you see, I do like to know what's going on in both camps. I do like to compare. I like to play with different toys. And Envision AI is very, very good. But Google Lookout, there's a whole new thing again, and you can't get that on your iPhone. I don't think they're doing a version of that for the iPhone. And it will read text. I think it will even read handwriting now. Google's got such a big search, you know, they've got Google Images and things like that, and I guess they can draw on all those resources. I used it the other day to see what the use-by date was on a box from the fridge, and it worked straight away. It was very good.
And you can get Be My Eyes and things like that on there?
You can, yes. Any other apps you want to ask if they're on Android, Dave?
Well, I'm just trying to help everyone understand what are some of the challenges that you might face if you were considering switching, if you were curious, maybe you wanted to give Android a go. So you might need to learn a couple of new gestures. You might need to download a couple of different apps in terms of some of those specialist apps. Your mileage may vary in terms of Braille. Are there any other really biggies, do you think, Fiona, in terms of things that people might need to consider? Were they wanting to try out Android?
Actually, something I really like that might be an advantage to some people. I know some people get on fine with face recognition. I've not tried it because I kind of just thought it was too annoying. Like, if fingerprint recognition works, why change it?
And is that what you use then? You use fingerprint recognition to unlock your device?
I do, but my phone gives me the choice. I can use face recognition instead if I want to. I never did. I just thought, that's a faff. I can't be bothered. And also, I don't like the idea that somebody else could point my phone at my face in a shop and pay for their stuff without me realising. Whereas with the fingerprint, I have to touch the device. If somebody made the device touch my finger, I'd know. Do you see the difference?
For a lot of blind partially sighted people, that's why they hung on to the SE phones, you know, with the physical phone button.
Yeah, my phone is actually an SE.
Right. Let's talk about devices then, Fiona. Let's explore that a bit. So which phones, what would be a good Android phone that would give a great, you know, introduction, a good accessible experience for a newbie?
I would say, don't get a really cheap phone, because you do get what you pay for, unfortunately. I know most of us don't have much money, especially at the moment. I mean, I've got things on contract because I couldn't spend hundreds of pounds all in one go. That's a more accessible way to get your phone, perhaps. I'd say either one of the Pixel phones or a Samsung. I'd say if you're going from an iPhone, personally, I like the Samsungs. They give you various apps on the phone that you don't have to install. And I don't know whether Pixel phones do. They're a more clean interface. And some people prefer that. It's very much about choice as well. That's the other thing. If you buy an iPhone, they're pretty much all the same. Okay, the SE might not have some of the features the others do, but they're all the same. If you get a Samsung or a Pixel or a Xiaomi or a Plus One or a different, they all have their own different things that they give you. I mean, do a bit of research, I'd say. I went for Samsung's. One of the reasons I did it, actually, I remember now more clearly, was I wanted to be able to record in stereo without having to attach a microphone to the end of my iPhone. Now, iPhones do have stereo mics, but they say, oh, but you can only use that for video. And when you've spent so much money, to me, that's just rude. On the Samsung Galaxy phones, and I think the Pixels and maybe some others, you can record in stereo. There's a microphone at each end of the phone, and they're really not bad. I've even recorded some musical stuff. Not professional type thing, but it's not bad to say, oh, this is a demo of my latest song, or I'll just record a little bit of this choir thing if you don't. I mean, I do have a dictaphone I use, but sometimes you don't want to carry all that stuff, and if you just want to record for and there are various apps, like there's a lovely app I use on Android called HiQ MP3 Recorder, which records in stereo and you can alter the volume level so that you don't get distortion if you're somewhere really loud, or you can have the manually turn the volume recording volume up if it's somewhere quite quiet. But the Samsung phones, they come with their own voice recorder, which will do for just something not very long.
We'll talk a bit more about the podcast in a second. Just finally, on this sort of comparison and things to look out for, one of the features I think of an Android phone is, of course, the voice assistant, which I found performs particularly well. You mentioned Samsung, they have their own voice assistant. Just talk us through that a little bit.
Oh, they do. They have Bixby, but to be honest, I tend to use the Google one, and that's another wonderful thing with Samsung choice. You can use their stuff or the Google stuff. But Bixby I do use because I use it for, they call them routines. So it can know by location where you are. And so, for example, when I go to church, my phone goes on silent automatically because it knows I'm at church. If I live right next door to my church, that wouldn't work and that would be a problem. But luckily, I don't. I mean, Siri is very irritating at the moment. So many things don't work. Like, I asked it to call mum and dad yesterday, and it said, I can only call one person. I'm like, yeah, mum and dad, that's their number, that's their house. Google it just would have done it. Also, Chromecast is a wonderful part of, I know you can get it on iPhones, but it's beautifully integrated into Android and stuff. But the Google Assistant is what I use most of the time for speech. Although I am using Bixby a bit now because I've got a Samsung Galaxy Watch. I believe I may be able to change to Google if I want, but I haven't really played with that yet. I only got it last week. But the Google Assistant, it just works, and you can even ask it your battery level and things like that, and it just works.
Thank you so much, Fiona, for your time and for being an absolute fountain of knowledge. And it's great to hear about your experiences and just getting a little bit of a light shining on some of the areas of Android. Tell us about the podcast then. Where can we hear that, and what's it called?
The podcast is called Blind Android Users. So search anywhere in your podcast app, on Google, on the web for blind Android users. We're also on YouTube, and the YouTube thing is quite nice because that they're videos, because it's YouTube, but really it's audio, if you know what I mean. But it's divided up into sections. So, for example, I did a demo of a braille display last week, and I could just point people to that if they only wanted to hear that bit. But the podcast is also divided up into chapters so that people can just hear the bit they're interested in. It usually is out by Mondays, and we love talking to other people about Android. We just have quite a big geek fest. But one thing I really want to say is please, please, please try Android as a new experience if you try it now. Don't go, oh, it was terrible 5 or 10 years ago, so I hate it and I'll never use it again. Because honestly, it is completely different. It's not the same experience at all.
Okay, Fiona, we started this conversation feeling a little bit nostalgic about some of your Nokia phones.
Yeah.
Just finally, which was your favourite and why?
I used to love various phones with QWERTY keyboards, and I would love for there to be an Android phone with a QWERTY keyboard that actually had a decent spec. And I haven't seen that. And yes, I've got a Bluetooth keyboard, and yes, I've got a Braille display, but wouldn't it be lovely if it was all in the phone? Tino with the number pad was okay, but I did love the QWERTY keyboard. I used to use it all, because I'm a touch typist, I used to use it all the time. It was wonderful. So yeah, things like the really small ones, like the E5 or the E70 and definitely the E5, which actually I think I still have in a drawer somewhere. And they used to have headphone sockets. Remember those days? Although some Android phones now have headphone sockets, not many. They usually, you have to have an adapter now, which is a bit annoying.
Fiona Dunn, phone enthusiast and co-host of the Blind Android podcast. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Fiona Dunn there, sharing her love of Android. And Callum Stoneman, Tasneem Arshad, have you tried Android?
Yeah, I've had a little bit of a gander with Android. I mean, obviously, it's a completely different system to Apple, which is how kind of Steve Nutt explained it to me. And I do agree with him, because he's very much an Android user. And for work, my phone is Samsung, and you know, with due respect to Samsung, you know, great phones, but I really struggle personally with trying to operate, you know, TalkBack and things like that. So I much prefer the experience of fluid vanilla Android, which you get with the kind of Google Pixel phones and some other Android phones. So I think it's a work in progress for me. I'd like to spend a lot more time with Android and see what it can do. And I hear the dictation function on it is very accessible and very accurate. So again, it'd be really good to sort of, I think it's really important to keep an open mind and not to rule any systems out. I think it's important to try it for yourself, see what you think, have an explore, and you know, try to avoid the whole comparison of Apple versus Android.
How about you, Callum Stoneman? I mean, why are we so loyal to our devices? Why do people get so tribal about this stuff? Because actually, they've probably got more in common than a lot of people realize. I mean, you know, it's all about apps and touchscreens, and you know, they're I mean, you'd struggle to tell the difference, wouldn't you, in some cases now?
In some cases, yeah. I mean, well, certainly from my point of view, I think these companies are experts at locking you in, aren't they, to their ecosystem. For example, I've got an iPhone and I've got a Mac. And then my wife has got an iPhone and an iPad, and then we've both got a set of AirPods. So we're kind of all over Apple. I mean, we could move to Android, and we did try it quite a while ago, probably about 3 years ago. We both kind of tried moving over to Android, and we didn't mind it. We got on all right with it, but we just got so used to Apple, and everything just connects together so nicely with the devices that we've got. And we've got family sharing on iCloud, and we've got additional iCloud storage, and everything's saved up there, and we've got a shared calendar through iCloud, and you know, passwords as well. That's a big one, because they're a nightmare, obviously, for security. All our passwords are in iCloud Keychain, and they're a nightmare to get out from anywhere else or into anywhere else. So I think you get used to something, you like it, you buy into that ecosystem sometimes without realizing it, and then you know, if it works, then it works. So
I started recently playing with a Pixel. I'm actually really enjoying it, particularly the voice assistant. One of the things that I had to do there so that I would receive my messages on my Pixel was to turn off iMessage on my iPhone. And it was only when I did that that I realized how I'd been sort of reeled in, you know, to the world of iMessage, when actually, you know, text messages are perfectly adequate for, you know, most use cases, I think. But then I had sort of, you know, my Apple friends sort of contacted me going, what's happened? What have you done? You know, so...
Especially when most providers give you unlimited texts now, you'd be hard pushed to find a provider, at least here in the UK. I don't know about other countries, but most providers now will give you unlimited minutes and texts. It's only the data that's got a limit on it.
Yeah. I mean, you can get the familiar voices now, vocalizer voices. You can have on Android, they've got the magic tap, of course, the two-finger double tap to start and stop things, you know. So actually, I don't think the learning curve is quite as steep as it used to be. There still obviously are things that you need to get your head around. And, you know, Droid obviously does things in slightly different ways, has slightly different terminology and things like that. But actually, it's not insurmountable.
Yeah, you're right. And TalkBack's come a long way as well in the last 2 years, or maybe even the last year. It's come a long way, and it's got a lot more similar to the iPhone now, you know, because before, TalkBack used to be just a whole set of one finger gestures. So it would trap anything that was just one finger. But then if you did like a two-finger or three-finger swipes, that would be sent straight to the system. You know, TalkBack would ignore it, essentially. Whereas obviously VoiceOver, you can do two, three, even four-finger gestures. And they've come to TalkBack now, which helps with that learning curve.
Now, Fiona talked about her love of old technology. Is there a feature or function from an old device that you kind of miss and wish you still had? Tasneem Arshad.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of functions. One is the old kind of texting thing, you know, where you would, there's a specific name for it and I forget it. You know, you guys probably know what it is, but the whole, you know, we've got an
online... T9?
That's it. Absolutely. That's it. I do miss that. I mean, even though I was much faster at that, you know, you'd have to wait a second or two's delay. I found that I was able to text much faster using that system. And of course, you can still get that through the Revo kind of Bluetooth small portable keyboard that we've covered previously. So that system is available on that. But generically speaking, it's not on smartphones. And the other aspect I miss is that, you know, you don't get the kind of, you know, if you loaded up your old Nokia phone, you get like a little tune to say that it's on and when it switches off as well. And certainly when you turn the phone on. And I like that about Android, because their phones seem to do that. For example, Motorola, when you turn that on, it says hello Moto. And I was like, that's pretty cool. You know, it'd be great. And actually, Moto means fatty in Punjabi. So it's really hilarious that it's saying that. But yeah, I kind of like that feature. And I think it'd be really nice if Apple did something, because for somebody who might be completely blind, it's nice if you have like a little tune or alert that says your phone is switching off, and you know for definite that that's actually switched off or turned on.
Callum Stoneman, are you missing anything?
I used to have one of the, I can't remember what phone it was, but it was a few years ago. I used to have a flip phone. So you could just flip the phone up and answer it. You know, when a call came in, you could just flip open the phone, it would answer the call. And then as soon as you closed the screen and kind of folded it back, it just hung up the call. And that was brilliant.
There's a Galaxy Fold, I think. You could get that.
Oh, yeah, there is. Yeah, there's the Samsung Galaxy Fold or the Galaxy Flip. I'm not entirely sure what the difference is, but they're quite pricey, them phones, though. But I used to love that. No messing about with your two-finger double tap or trying to find the answer button. You could just flip it up, have your conversation. It was brilliant in an argument as well. Just slam it shut. Yeah, right, well, whatever then. That phone down, there you go.
Satisfying.
Yeah.
Way to end a phone call. There you go, snap your phone shut. All right, well, I think, you know, I still bellyache about battery life. I mean, the battery used to last a week, you know, that was just normal. And I don't suppose it's a big hassle to put it on charge every night. Everyone sort of seems to have accepted that, you know, as being a thing. And of course, you can go out and buy a massive phone or a power bank or something like that. But just a tiny little phone with a battery that goes on forever. I do think we've still lost something there. All right, let us know if you're lamenting the loss of a feature or function that you used to have but don't get from a modern device. Let us know. Callum Stoneman, Tasneem Arshad, thanks a lot. We've had an email come flooding in from William Richards, who is interested in our discussion of text-to-speech voices. And William says that it reminds him of the debate around using AI to deliver audio description. But William says you would have to be pretty selective about your choice of voice, because clearly a very synthetic sounding voice, like the old Microsoft Sham that we used to get in Windows XP, wouldn't be so great. So you would want to still preserve a little bit of emotion. And I did try to sort of ask Netflix about this last year, because clearly it is a way to provide more audio description if we can kind of speed up that process and reduce the amount of human hours that are involved. Have either of you, Callum Stone and Tasdy Marshall, have you heard a text-to-speech voice doing audio description yet? Amazon have got some of this going on, I think.
Not that I'm aware of, but, you know, it could easily have been AI. And if it's that good, like the samples from the audiobooks that we've listened to before, then I guess we might not be able to tell the difference.
You might not even notice, Callum Stoneman.
Exactly.
Are you worried about this?
Well, it's similar for me, to be honest. There was one programme that I watched the other week, and I can't for the life of me remember what it was, but the AD was a bit, I thought it potentially could have been, you know, it could have been a text-to-speech, but it wasn't off-putting. It didn't take away from it. So maybe it was just a human narrator with just a bit of a kind of strange sounding voice. But, you know, it was still great. It was fantastic. And, I couldn't say for certain. It certainly wasn't Microsoft Sam, I can tell you that for free.
I like my AD narrators. I don't think anyone's seriously going to do that, by the way.
No.
I like my audio description to sort of be sympathetic to the source material. You know, I like James O'Hara doing the audio description on James Bond films, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So, William, it's definitely one to watch, and we'll be keeping an eye on it. Let us know what you find. And if you have any thoughts about audio description or artificial intelligence when it comes to text-to-speech, then do get in touch. We're always delighted to receive your emails to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. You can drop us an email or even a voice note. We'd love to hear your voice. And somebody who did that was Julian. And Julian was very interested in our item about the Android Reader, a recent addition to Android, making it easier for people, particularly those with low vision, to read text on screen. And Julian had a few questions, and to be honest with you, Julian, I didn't know the answers, so we've brought in RNIB's lead of inclusive design, Robin Spinks. Good to have you back on the programme, Robin. So let's just clear up some of these points then that Julian raises. The first question then, I guess, is Android Reader really a new feature of the OS?
And I have to clear up a bit of confusion here. Thanks, Julian, for raising the questions. It's much appreciated. So basically, I had a pre-release version of the app that is Android Reader. So the way that it installed on my particular test device was slightly different from the way that people will experience it. So it is an app. Yeah, that's the most important thing. And it's really good to clarify that. It's an app that you can download from the Play Store, and it will enable you to have, I think, a much better reading experience of long form content, articles, PDFs, web documents, etc., if you've got low vision. So lots of us want to have, you know, better reading experiences, and you can do it with that app.
Brilliant. So you can get Android Reader as an app from the Play Store.
Yes.
Okay. And I guess the next point really from Julian, Android Reader, it's not just available for the Google Pixel devices.
Again, I think when we spoke last, there was a little bit of confusion about what it would be supporting. So you can use it on lots of Android devices. So if you've even got an older device that's you've kept up to date, you can download that app and try it. I don't have a list of all the devices that it will run on. That's probably one of the things that we can have a look into. But, you know, the best thing to do, I think, as with any of these apps, is just to try it. Go to the Play Store, have a look, see if you can download it onto your device. But it should work on other Android devices besides just Pixel devices.
Now, Julian is keen to point out that there's a sort of a different mindset when it comes to Android accessibility. You know, he sort of says that the accessibility suite is an app that you can get from the Play Store, so that the release schedule, you know, the sort of the cadence of updates may well be separate from OS updates, if that makes sense. How important is it to recognize that and to understand that actually you don't have to wait for the next major version of the operating system perhaps to get some accessibility improvements?
It's a key differentiation between iOS and Android. I've actually been a long-term iPhone user who's quite recently come into Android, and I'm now regularly using both OSs. I'm actually using an Android device as my primary daily driver, if you like, right now. But that's a really good point. You know, you can actually go in and look for updates. You can have updates served up to you, and you don't have to just wait for the operating system update. I encourage people to be doing both, to be updating your apps as soon as there are an update's available, but also to make sure that your OS and security patches are up to date, just because typically people will have a better experience if they're doing that.
And finally, Robin, given that the Android Reader is an app, it can be uninstalled if the user decides it's not for them. Maybe it's not suitable for your needs. How much of an advantage is that?
I mean, that's a great advantage, being able to do that. And actually, you know, I would be surprised if someone with low vision doesn't find it helpful. But you know what? Everybody's different. Everyone's needs are different. To uninstall it, you could really easily do that. So it's, again, I guess, the flexibility of having an app. Now, the thing I really appreciated, and actually one of the things that I think probably created a bit of confusion around this, was that when you go into the settings on your device, you can actually see Android Reader in the accessibility menu. So you go into accessibility and you can see Android Reader at the top or near the top of that menu. So, you know, if you're a long-term iOS user, for example, that's typically where you'd expect to find, you know, operating system updates. So yeah, you can uninstall it if you don't like it, but what we would say is give it a try, see if you like it, and hopefully it'll be helpful. But Android continues to be super flexible, customizable, and I think, you know, what we're encouraging people to do is to see it as a really viable option if you're blind or partially sighted. And I know, Dave, that we will be generating more assets for people who are interested in Android in the very near future. And we really look forward to talking to people and getting contributions in that work strand.
Robin Spinks, Inclusive Design Lead from RNIB. Thanks very much. And thank you, Julian, for contacting the programme. And if there's something you've heard that isn't clear, or you think there's something that is perhaps not quite right, we're always keen to hold our hand up and set the record straight. So do reach out. The email address is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's it for this time on Tech Talk. We really appreciate your company. Do tune in next week when we'll be hearing from audiobook producer Matt Brown from Living Audio and a new beauty app from Estee Lauder. So check that out next week on Tech Talk. Callum Stone and Tasneem Arshad, thank you so much.
Thank you, and see you soon.
Thank you. Bye for now.
And from me, Dave Williams, and the rest of the team, bye for now.